This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Live and Learn, and I'm Lim Soo Ann. As much of the world continues to battle against COVID-19, the situation in India has dominated headlines, especially in the past week, as they battle a deadly second wave. Reports of hospitals running out of beds, people fighting over limited oxygen supplies, and mass crematoriums burning day and night are harrowing to read about, to say the least. So today, to find out more about what's happening on the ground and what led to the situation that India is facing right now, I am joined by Lina Minkhani, the Regional Head of South Asia of Médecins Sans Frontières Access Campaign, and we'll also be talking about what the global community can do to help India make it through the second wave. And we'll also dive deeper into the role of an IP waiver for COVID-19 vaccines. Thank you so much for joining me today, Lina. So first, you know, is India facing a humanitarian crisis right now?
Yeah, so these are grave times in India, and a humanitarian crisis is unfolding, predominantly with the collapse of the healthcare system in certain parts of India, particularly the capital and neighboring areas. And the news actually does confirm, and our personal experience as a person living in New Delhi, near New Delhi, has been that people have been dying without access to oxygen and medical care. So that's one thing that is really happening. And one of the key reasons was the complacency among everybody, including the government officials, the scientists, and almost everybody believed that, you know, India had overcome COVID, and public health measures such as masking, social gatherings, you know, the restrictions on social gatherings were majorly relaxed. And one of the key challenges in Asia, I think, is are the big social gatherings that we seem to have, our religious festivals, and also election campaigns. So if there's a learning to be had from India, is please don't let down your guard against COVID-19. Please keep public health measures in place to avoid the kind of humanitarian crisis as we see in India.
Mm. Why do you think people were... What was the reason behind that sudden relaxation of restrictions? You know, was it... what was the situation in India like before this, right? Up until this surge happened?
Yeah. So, of course, because of economic reasons and the kind of fatigue people have had, for months they were in lockdown, and subsequently they were getting back to their jobs and their work and, you know, all the things that matter to people significantly, because it's tied to their earnings and livelihood. The second thing is that we actually believed, a lot of people in India actually believed that, you know, somehow we were protected against COVID-19, and discounted the kind of experience of other developed and developing countries where second waves had followed, more fatal than the first. And I think any country who's working on COVID-19 and public health officials in countries like Malaysia, for example, should actually prepare for second waves. These are very important measures, and put in place oxygen access and critical care training, so that, you know, the medical healthcare system can cope with the spike in numbers.
Mm. Yes. So was the healthcare system in India not sufficiently prepared for this surge? For this rise in cases, and is that why we're seeing the situation now?
Yeah, so the healthcare system in some parts of the country had actually, for example, in one state in south of India, had actually prepared really well, put in oxygen plants in every medical college, and had actually prepared for the surge. Others had not. So obviously the ones that did not prepare for the surge are the ones paying the price in terms of spikes to the COVID-19 pandemic. So yes, some prepared, some states in India did prepare and some did not. And the spikes are coming in from places where there have been huge social gatherings and a lack of preparation in the healthcare system.
Mm. And, you know, how are people coping right now? You know, what have you seen or heard from people, especially, you know, how are they feeling as you said, right? It is a humanitarian crisis.
So I think people are filled with grief. Even today, someone told me how 37-year-old woman is in critical care.
Oh dear.
And you know, yesterday someone's mother had passed away, and day before another colleague's brother had passed away. So, you know, people are just filled with complete grief at this point of time. And the fact is that entire families are infected. So, you know, they're sick themselves while they're cremating or burying the dead, you know. So this is absolutely heartbreaking as an Indian to watch this happening to my people. Yeah.
I'm so sorry to hear that. And I can't begin to imagine how difficult it is, right? Because, you know, the whole world has been warned again and again that we have to be prepared for a next possible wave. And yet we see in so many countries, you know, before this, it was in the UK, in the US, and now it's India, that the next wave comes, and, you know, so often countries and people are not prepared for it. And then you just see the devastation that comes with it.
Absolutely. And that is why I'm sort of appealing to all countries in Asia, particularly, you know, Malaysia and Indonesia, that please do not let down your guard. Keep public health measures in place. Avoid social gatherings. You know, we all have our, you know, gatherings in Asia. We are such social people. We would like to meet. But please keep public health measures in place, and please keep masking up. And please try and get yourself vaccinated. It's superbly important at this point of time to increase access to the vaccines.
Mm. And, you know, speaking of vaccines, could you sort of, could you describe what is the vaccination progress like in India? You know, India is very much known as the pharmacy of the world, you know, but what was the vaccination progress like? I understand that, you know, the country has the capacity to manufacture about 70 million doses a month. But, you know, was that enough to vaccinate the domestic population, and are people getting the vaccine?
So actually, 70 million doses per month is just barely enough to vaccinate about 2% of India's population at any given point of time. And these vaccines, predominantly the one that is in use, which is Covishield, the Oxford vaccine, is just not sufficient to meet India's needs, let alone developing countries. And the big lesson that we have learned from this in India is that we needed more manufacturers of the same vaccine. You know, to just have one manufacturer, Serum Institute of India, catering to the demand in India and the demand in COVAX and developing countries is just not sufficient. We needed more manufacturers, and more manufacturers should have been added last year. And exclusive deals and exclusive licensing should not be the norm. There should be greater sharing of technology and intellectual property.
Hmm. What about access to vaccines then, with whatever supplies that were available to the Indian population? Were people getting access to these vaccines, or did people want to be vaccinated?
What we see on the ground is there are many people who have vaccinated, particularly the elderly, have gone out and vaccinated themselves. At the same time, there is a fear about the vaccination and the side effects of the vaccination. So you see some poor and marginalized communities are worried about, you know, the side effects of the vaccines. So there's a greater uptake among the middle class, who's digitally smart and able to, you know, go into the science of vaccines. Mm. And you also see more poor and marginalized communities more worried about the vaccine. So we have to do far greater work to increase acceptance of being vaccinated against COVID-19 in particularly marginalized communities. And also there are other barriers. For example, people who are homeless may not have the identity cards to be vaccinated, while they are the most, you know, vulnerable. So indeed, we have to start increasing, not just in India, but in many countries, more work needs to be done on sensitizing communities on the importance of the vaccine.
Hmm. And are vaccines in India being given for free, or is there some sort of public and private parallel pathway happening? You know, for example, here in Malaysia, the vaccines are currently only given by the government, and so people who are eligible are getting it for free. But is it the same in India?
That's how it started. For example, I was vaccinated free of cost at a local primary healthcare center. There are options for Indians who would like to go to the private sector. to go and pay 250 rupees and get vaccinated, which is about $3. So it depends upon people's choices. And the private sector, because it has such a vast network in India, was roped in by the government to also dispense vaccines. But the pricing has been controlled by the government, so they cannot charge more than a certain amount for the vaccine. So today, if you want, you can get vaccinated for free in the public healthcare system or pay a charge of $3 and get vaccinated in a private facility in India.
So, you know, the government is stepping in to ensure that, you know, the vaccines aren't priced, aren't pricing people out of getting access to those vaccines.
Indeed, in the last 4 months that the vaccines have been being rolled out, I know that, you know, a lot of people have accessed the vaccines free of cost. And the public healthcare system has been really, I must say, a big challenge to vaccinate so many adults at the same time, healthcare workers, elderly. And our vaccination pace was quite speedy in the last 2 months. However, looking just at the numbers in India, the sheer numbers in India, you know, of course, we need more access to more vaccines to be able to vaccinate the entire adult population if we are to reach herd immunity. So in India, if we are to reach herd immunity, we need to vaccinate at least 70 to 80%, which is a huge, humongous number, running into millions and millions of people. And that is where the challenging on increasing manufacturing comes in.
I think it's very easy for a lot of us to say, you know, each country needs to vaccinate 70 to 80% of its population, but we don't realize how these numbers differ so vastly from country to country, right? For Malaysia, 80% is about 25 million, but that number for India is far, far higher than what we need. And that is the difference that it makes, right? Because the amount of vaccines needed is simply a huge amount that people don't always comprehend.
Indeed, and that has been the biggest challenge that the world faces today, that India is going through a humanitarian crisis, needing to vaccinate all its people, adult people. At the same time, India is the key supplier of vaccines to the COVAX facility. So as we speak, India's crisis is affecting everybody in the developing world.
We'll go for a quick break now, Lina. And when we come back, you know, I want to touch on that manufacturing process because I understand there has been issues of shortages and the impact and also potentially impact of export ban on raw materials in other country. And of course, you know, we will get to what the global community can do when it comes to the IP waiver as well. But we'll go for a quick break now. I'm speaking to Lina Minkani, the regional head of South Asia for Médecins Sans Frontières Access Campaign, and we are talking about the second COVID-19 wave in India and how it is an unfolding humanitarian crisis. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn with me, Lim Soo Ann. Today, I'm speaking to Lina Minkani, the regional head of South Asia for Médecins Sans Frontières Access Campaign. And she is joining me from India to talk about what has led to the second COVID-19 wave in India. And before the break, you know, we were talking about how it is an unfolding humanitarian crisis that everyone across the world is watching. The relaxation of restrictions has led to a rise in cases. And right now, it's heartbreaking to read, you know, the news reports that are coming out from India every day. And, you know, before the break, we were also talking about how vaccines play a major role in tackling the second wave. Now, you were talking about vaccine supplies, right? I understand that supply shortages were a significant obstacle. I mean, did that have much of an effect on vaccine production in the country?
Yes, so one of the issues that Indian manufacturers, for example, faced, that certain raw materials that they were sourcing from the United States were being difficult to access. And I think India at the highest level raised it with the U.S. administration, and the White House has now announced that they will ease restrictions or at least allow the raw materials to reach Indian manufacturers. So there's some good news here, and we are just waiting to hear what happens in this month. But one of the biggest challenges that we face is at this point, the most used vaccine, which is Covishield, the Oxford vaccine, can only be produced by one manufacturer in India, which is the Serum Institute. And that's precisely why we've been arguing for a different model of manufacturing, which is not exclusive, which is not controlled by just pharmaceutical corporations, where, you know, there are more manufacturers roped into manufacturing the important vaccines for COVID-19.
So how involved are the other manufacturers right now? You know, are they manufacturing other types of COVID-19 vaccines?
Yes. So in India, the Indian public sector and Bharat Biotech collaborated on a vaccine called Covaxin, which is also being produced in the country in much smaller volumes and awaits more data publication and WHO pre-qualification. So I think as more vaccines get pre-qualified by WHO, we could see more easing of shortages. But at this point of time, we just have Covishield that's largely being recommended by the WHO. Indian manufacturers are also producing, are gearing up to produce Sputnik 5 with Russian technology. And once again, we just have to wait and see what the WHO recommends for the Russian Sputnik 5 vaccine and also what recommendations the Indian government and WHO will give on the use of Sputnik 5 in India and other countries.
I understand that India has also been exporting vaccines previously as part of its contractual obligations for COVAX, but also as a method of vaccine diplomacy with some countries. But I understand there is a temporary hold or temporary ban on these exports. Is that right?
Indeed. Well, India basically can't meet its own needs. So it's an unfortunate side effect. The unfortunate side effect of the humanitarian crisis in India has been that India can't meet its own needs and is unable to allow supply to COVAX. And that is an unfortunate side effect of the crisis in India, as we see. India did, the vaccines were being exported, 50% were going to the Indian program, 50% were going to COVAX. But that changed in March when the crisis happened in India. So unfortunately today, the major supply of vaccines to COVAX has dried up. And that is why we are appealing to developed countries. We've been asking the US administration, we've been asking other countries like the UK, please share the excess vaccines that you're already sitting on with COVAX and other developing countries. This is the time for solidarity, and this is the time to share the vaccines that developed countries have with developing countries, considering that they have vaccinated up to 50% or 30% of the adult population.
I mean, there is that whole issue of equity, isn't it? Because I remember reading recently, there was that report that more than 1 billion doses of COVID-19 vaccines have been administered worldwide. But more than half of those, I think about 58%, were administered only in three countries, when you have, you know, so many countries all over the world, especially poorer countries, who are struggling to get enough doses of vaccines to, you know, start their vaccination program.
You're absolutely correct. WHO has highlighted that 80% of the vaccines that have been administered have all gone to developed countries. And what we are seeing today, developed countries and upper middle income countries, what we are seeing today is equality at its starkest level in the midst of a pandemic, where all global leaders had promised solidarity and that the vaccine would be a global public good. But that's not happening. Richer countries are able to vaccinate at a much faster rate because they have tied up contractually all the supplies of vaccines. And what as MSFP are saying is that this is the time to share those vaccines that you have in excess. And when India is facing a crisis and COVAX is facing a crisis, this is the moment when you should start immediately sharing those supplies with the developing world.
I mean, at the risk of sounding cliche, I mean, no one is safe until everyone is safe right now, because this is a pandemic that will not stop until we can get enough people all around the world, not just within our own borders, to be vaccinated. Because, you know, we've seen how easily it can spread from one country to another country.
Yes, absolutely. And India is sort of witness to that precise issue that, you know, we had a largely unvaccinated population, even though the government was ramping up vaccination. And the pandemic caught us before we could vaccinate a large number enough to reach herd immunity. And I think this is the biggest challenge that other countries today face, that if they don't have access to the vaccines, mm-hmm. how do they protect their people? And what the UK has done and what the US has done should be replicated in other parts of the world, where even healthcare workers and the elderly are not vaccinated.
Mm, that's right. You know, there's still so much progress to be made. We are far from eradicating the pandemic across the world. Now, let's talk also about the IP waiver, right? And it's something that India and South Africa first proposed to the WTO in October last year. Could you give us a refresher on what that IP waiver entails and, you know, why are they calling for it right now?
Well, South Africa and India put together a very important proposal for member states to consider, including, for example, Malaysia to consider. And all of us know, when the hepatitis C epidemic hit Malaysia, Malaysia issued a compulsory license.
Mm-hmm.
Malaysia faced a lot of pressure from Gilead Sciences and the U.S. administration at the time against compulsory licensing. So, you know, countries face a lot of obstacles in dealing with intellectual property in the middle of a pandemic or an epidemic. And what this proposal simply said was you waive off all intellectual property till this pandemic is over on all medical products. So this is very critical, not just for India, but also countries like Malaysia, who have in the past been wanting to address epidemics address intellectual property barriers, but have faced immense pressure mm-hmm. in doing so. And the hepatitis C drug sofosbuvir is a classic example where the Malaysian government faced immense pressure. So the idea is, and the important principle behind the waiver is, we waive intellectual property monopolies of pharmaceutical corporations and other entities till the pandemic is over, which is a fair argument and proposal to make on behalf of the developing world to developed countries. And that's really very important.
Hmm. So then why is there so much opposition against it? And who are the ones opposing this waiver?
I think you may have heard that, the biggest lobbying effort is underway in the United States to convince the U.S. administration not to support the waiver. So the opposition behind the governments is the pharmaceutical industry, the big MNCs and the biopharma industry. So whether it's the UK or whether it's the EU, whether it's Canada, US and Australia, and Japan, there's intense lobbying behind the scene by the pharmaceutical industry to prevent these countries from supporting the waiver that we've seen firsthand. The second thing is COVID-19 is a very lucrative business for pharma companies.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the bottom line of Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson today, it's billions of dollars that they are going to be earning through the COVID-19 vaccines. So they are very reluctant to give up the intellectual property or any other form of monopoly that they might have. So part of this is the pharma business, the way pharma operates in the area of medicine and healthcare, where they are very reluctant to give up their monopolies and are actually putting pressure on governments like the US government to not support the waiver.
Mm. So then if, a waiver were to happen at this point, is it will it be considered too late to help India tackle the second surge, or how will it be helpful to help India improve access to vaccines, and not just India but globally as well?
So in India, if you look at what is happening now, as much as we are talking about vaccines, we are desperate need for therapeutics. And treatment providers, doctors and patients even will take a drug like remdesivir that does not work in hospitalized patients.
Mm-hmm.
With five manufacturers licensed by Gilead, the demand is not being met in India. So what happens if a drug actually works and the whole world wants it, if mm-hmm. every government wants to pile up that drug for a COVID-19 surge? We will not be able to meet the demand. India alone will not be able to meet the demand. Malaysia will have to produce the drugs. Bangladesh will have to produce the drugs. Argentina will have to produce the drugs. And, what the IP waiver does is enable countries to look at supporting technology, funding for scaling up, instead of worrying about intellectual property battles with pharma companies. You know, Russia right now is in the midst of a pharmaceutical battle with Gilead Sciences over Remdesivir. The drug is not important at all. I agree. Remdesivir is not something that we would absolutely recommend. Mm-hmm. But what it denotes is the way pharmaceutical industry will behave if a drug actually works. So what we really need is to recognize that a few manufacturers here and there cannot meet the demand for vaccines or drugs and to scale up. And we should be worrying about technology, we should be worrying about funding, we should be worrying about manpower, and we should not be worrying about intellectual property barriers. So that's what the TRIPS waiver is all about for India.
Hmm. You know, we are in a pandemic that is of proportions that we've never seen before in human history. And yet, why is it so difficult for something like this to pass? Because as you say, we are seeing a humanitarian crisis in India itself, right? And we're not, and that's not even looking at the global picture.
Yes, indeed. So 20 years ago, when HIV/AIDS hit Asia, Latin America and Africa, millions of people were dying. And, you know, all of our countries wanted to make the medicines or issue compulsory licenses to access life-saving medicines. But we had to do it all alone. The Malaysian government had to issue a compulsory license on its own. The Thai government had to do it. The ASEAN region, Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia, all these countries had to grapple with intellectual property battles and barriers on their own for antiretroviral drugs. Why can't we change the system in the middle of a pandemic? Why do we have to do it on our own? We can do it together. Wave off all intellectual property and work towards delivering what is required for patients, you know.
It's the perfect timing, isn't it? If not now, when?
If not now, when? Exactly.
Mm. So then what will it take for this waiver to pass? You know, what needs to happen?
Well, the first thing that needs to happen is if ASEAN countries and Malaysia could become co-sponsors for the proposal. The proposal needs more supporters, and it needs people to outrightly, directly support the waiver. Mm-hmm. And Malaysia could become a co-sponsor for the TRIPS waiver. And my appeal to the Malaysian government is stand with India and South Africa and the rest of the developing world in supporting the waiver and become a co-sponsor. Most importantly, please ask for the negotiations to start for the intellectual property waiver.
Hmm. You know, do you think that there is that political will for better, more effective global cooperation? Or right now, you know, do you think it's all just lip service?
I think people want it. You can see the number of letters that have been written to President Biden, the number of times people have mobilized, even in the midst of COVID, to say that we support the waiver. From Australia to New Zealand, civil society and people are actually supporting the waiver. So public opinion is on our side, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whether governments will be on our side, whether the countries which are actually delaying the negotiations, such as Norway, the EU, the UK, the US, Canada, Australia and Japan predominantly, whether they will actually come change their political minds to be big enough to recognize that this is beyond the pharmaceutical industry's interest. And we are talking about people's lives at stake over here.
Mm. And, you know, in the case of what's happening in India, we can't just see this as a problem that's, you know, contained to one country, right? This is really a global issue that needs to be looked at through a global lens.
Absolutely. India sort of highlights that we need to support our public healthcare systems better with oxygen and preparation for critical care and healthcare workers, and also highlights that no matter what you produce in the middle of a pandemic, no matter how big a manufacturing base India has, it cannot meet the demand of its people because it's just got a handful of manufacturers thanks to the pharma deals that we have signed. So I think it's very important to change the pharma system, you know, to look for non-monopoly based manufacturing.
Before we end, Lina, would you have a message that you'd like to leave us with about what we've been talking about today?
My message is very simple, that I hope Malaysia never gets to see this crisis. And, you know, there are things in the public healthcare system that Malaysia can do, including preparing for higher oxygen demand, and preparing for critical care. And most importantly, you know, if there are people out there who are hesitating about taking the vaccine when it becomes available, please do take the vaccine, because a lot of my family members have actually benefited from taking the vaccine during the COVID pandemic. So that's my simple message to Malaysians today.
All right. Thank you so much, Lina. I've been speaking to Lina Minghani, the regional head of South Asia for Médecins Sans Frontières Access Campaign. And we've been talking about what led to the deadly COVID-19 surge that India is seeing right now and what the global community can do to help, and in particular, the role of an IP waiver when it comes to any therapeutics related to COVID-19, and that includes the COVID-19 vaccines. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can look up the podcast on bfm.my or on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn with me, Lim Soo Ann, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.